Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we continue our new series, The Authoritarian Playbook, by focusing on the Trump administration's attacks on federal government workers. The federal government employed roughly 2.3 million non-military workers at the start of this year, according to the New York Times. More than 150,000 federal workers have decided to resign. That number does not include the thousands of people who've been laid off or fired. Just about every major agency has lost workers. The EPA, the CDC, the FBI, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the National Labor Relations Board, the Transportation Board, and more. Everett Kelly, president of the American Federation of Government Employees, said the administration is going to great lengths to prevent the release of details on how many federal jobs are being eliminated and what impact these indiscriminate cuts will have on communities across the country. Watchdog groups say these firings are putting the country's health, safety, and economy at risk. And Crew says these firings are an unprecedented attack on independent agencies and government accountability. So how is civil society responding? If you have any questions or comments about the hundreds of thousands of people who have resigned or have been laid off or fired, once again, things are moving so fast and it's really hard to keep up. That's been actually a theme on the Authoritarian Playbook. If you'd like to talk about what has stood out for you or what effect you think these firings will have in your community, if you or someone you know has lost their job, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by three guests. Josh Bivens is chief economist at the Economic Policy Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank working for an economy that is just and strong, sustainable, and equitable. Josh Bivens has written for many publications, including USA Today and the New York Times, and is the author of Everybody Wins Except for Most of Us, What Economics Really Teaches About Globalization. Hi, Josh. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Elaine Kmark, Senior Fellow in Governance Studies and Director of the Center for Effective Public Management at Brookings, a nonprofit whose mission is to conduct in-depth nonpartisan research to improve policy and governance at local, national, and global levels. Elaine Kmark is co-author of the recent book, Lies That Kill, A Citizen's Guide to Disinformation, and the author of four books, including The End of Government as We Know It, Making Public Policy Work. Hi, Elaine. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Lawrence Gostin is Distinguished Professor at Georgetown University Law Center, Faculty Director at the O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law, Director of the World Health Organization's Center on Global Health Law, and author of the book, Global Health Security, A Blueprint for the Future. Last Thursday, Professor Gostin was fired from the scientific board of the NIH's Fogarty International Center. He said the letter he received read, "You serve at the pleasure of the Secretary of Health and Human Services. As such, your appointment has been rescinded." Hi, Professor Gostin. Thank you so much for joining us. And I'm so sorry that you were fired from the scientific board. Did you expect this?
I don't know. It's very, very hard to say. First of all, thank you for having me. I love being with you. I've been very critical of the anti-science policy of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I think the secretary has been undermining science. I've said so honestly, and so I don't know whether this is something that's hurtful or a badge of honor. I don't know, but I know that I'm among many, many who've tried to provide, you know, public service in health and science, we don't seem to be wanted anymore.
Mm. I'm so sorry. It's devastating. Professor Gostin, one of the themes that has come up in our new series, The Authoritarian Playbook, is that Trump is moving much faster than people expected. Even people who studied Project 2025 did not think things would move this quickly. What has your response been to these firings? You can't even keep track because they're happening so fast.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked in public health for more than 40 years for CDC, NIH, FDA, World Health Organization, you name it. And I've never seen anything like this. You know, one of the things in your introduction, which I took some note of, was about all these indiscriminate firings. And of course, that's true. But a lot of the firings are discriminate. They're intentional. Who are being fired are the scientists that have been working without recognition for very little salary. They get up every morning early just to keep the public safe. They're the ones that have been under attack simply for trying to inform the public about what's healthy and what's not, and particularly in relating to vaccines.
I think this is such a great point, Professor Gostin, because it's so easy to slam the government when things don't work right. And I think we're all getting almost like a government 101 class because of what's happening. It's so easy to forget the civil servants who have been in government for decades because they believe in public service. I mean, these people could go work for the private sector and make a lot more money, but they truly care about the work that they do. And we really take their work for granted. We expect the roads to be safe. We expect the airplanes to be safe. Now, obviously, we know they're not always safe. We expect the food that we eat to be safe. And it's almost like an afterthought. We don't think about these workers who've been in government for so long.
No, we don't. And what a great point. I mean, these, you know, I know these people, they're the best minds, scientists in the world. They could be at very lucrative jobs. They could have great recognition. And yet they go in, day out. They work hard. They do the numbers. They try to keep the public safe. And they do it in a way of with great integrity and rigor. And for that, we've always known that they have low salary and no recognition. But now they're getting ridiculed. Mm-hmm. Many of them are being threatened. My good friend Tony Fauci, for example, has to go with a bodyguard with him everywhere he goes. And Tony spent his life just working on infectious diseases, from AIDS to Ebola to Zika to COVID. And so they're hounded. They're ridiculed. We call them the deep state. It's hard to recognize America. And I always thought, even with President Trump, that the institutions will hold. But now you have a secretary who doesn't really believe in science, who doesn't really believe in vaccines, has spent a life fomenting distrust about public health agencies and accusations against the CDC and state and local health departments. If you're in that world and you've tried so hard for so long and you've done so much good, that really hurts. And people forget that these are dads, moms, grandparents, community members that have really serve the public for years. They don't always get it right. Who of us does? But for the most part, they do. And I always like to ask listeners just one question. Would you, if you had your choice about overseeing vaccines, medications, or other health products, would you rather it be based upon science and evidence? Or would you rather that political appointees like Secretary Kennedy, with no experience, to make them? And I think just to ask that question really is to answer it, but we never ask and answer that question.
It's such an important
question.
What
is the alternative to science? I don't know what that might be.
Right. Well, we're about to find out, unfortunately.
Yeah, I guess we are.
That is Lawrence Gostin, distinguished professor at Georgetown University Law Center, who was fired on Thursday from the scientific board of the NIH's Fogarty International Center. The letter he received said, "You serve at the pleasure of the Secretary of HHS. As such, your appointment has been rescinded." And we're going to do an entire show about public health, the CDC, and just the Make America Healthy Again movement. And you know, you could say, people say that in some ways they pushed Trump over the top. I mean, there are different elements of society that did that, but he did get a lot of support. And recently, this should be read by, if you have a New York Times subscription, on September 1st, a number of former leaders of the CDC wrote an op-ed, and I'm told this is unprecedented. "We ran the CDC. Kennedy is endangering every American's health." They write, "Kennedy has fired thousands of federal health workers and severely weakened programs designed to protect Americans from cancer, heart attacks, strokes, lead poisoning, injury, violence, and more." And it just goes on to say how people are going to be affected by all of this. Yeah. We're also joined today by Elaine Kmark, senior fellow at Brookings. Elaine, did you expect to see these firings happen so fast? And what concerns you the most?
I did not expect them to happen as quickly. They were, however, hinted at in Project 2025. So clearly this had been in the works for a long time. And I think we are now in stage two of this process. Stage one was the Elon Musk stage. He came in with a dramatic move before cabinet secretaries were in place. And what he did is he came in and he announced, he fired people wholesale, not really having the legal authority to do that. And that process is still being worked through the courts, even though the Supreme Court has said mostly that they could do what they did. But then the cabinet secretaries, and Robert Kennedy will be no exception to this, had to face the impact of their decisions. What is going to happen in their agencies? They may get away with the legal side of it. They're not going to get away with the fact that we are likely to have another pandemic. We are likely to have epidemics, whether it's measles or something else. We are likely to have planes crashing. We are likely to have thunderstorms and hurricanes we aren't warned of in time, and people, in fact, get hurt because of it. We're likely to have a Category 5 hurricane, and FEMA won't be ready to deal with the victims of it. And in fact, it's not just the CDC where current and former members have warned the public that things are not right. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, has warned the public things are going to go wrong. If we have another Hurricane Katrina, a Category 5 hurricane, we will be in trouble. And FEMA has warned that current and former members, and of course now the current members who signed the letter, are in danger of being fired, and that will be another legal question. What's happening here is that the administration has planted, maybe knowingly but probably unknowingly, as far as I can tell, about 10 to 20 time bombs in the federal government. They're going to go off at some point. They have ruined the capacity of the federal government to do the job that citizens want them to do. And things are going to blow up. People will get hurt. And at that point, something's got to happen. Congress has got to wake up and say, you've got to rebuild these agencies. And in some places, by the way, the agencies are in fact being rebuilt, more dramatic ones. When they fired nuclear safety engineers, that people who take care of the nuclear stockpile of the United States, they were fired and rehired within 36 hours. Okay, so in some very dramatic cases, the administration has done a turnaround. But there's so many other places out there where the impact is going to be bad. And guess what? It's going to rest with the president. The buck stops here, as Harry Truman used to say.
Well, that's one thing we were thinking about putting the show together, is when will people start to see and feel the impact of all of these firings?
Well, they're going to, first of all, let me give you a small example, which we saw just recently at the beginning of July. FEMA was under an order from Kristi Noem, the Secretary of DHS, that she had to approve every expenditure over $100,000. Now, that's a lot to us, but in the scope of the federal government, that is not a lot of money. And because she had to do that, there were search and rescue teams waiting on the Texas border to go in to the place where the floods were and start the rescue operation for all those little girls who got washed away in the camp in the floods. It took 3 days for her to okay the money to be spent for those search and rescue teams. 3 days in a disaster like a 100-year flood or a hurricane or something, that's an eternity. Okay, how many lives might have been saved had FEMA been allowed to act expeditiously as it needs to act? So there's going to be a lot of these things. They're going to mount up and people are going to look back, and the public is already looking at them saying, wait a minute, you know, we wanted you to make the government efficient. We didn't want you to break it.
And Elaine, to your point, it's so hard to keep up with all of this because I was just curious what's happening with FEMA. And I did not know about this. August 27th, PBS NewsHour, about 24 FEMA employees have been placed on leave after they signed an open letter criticizing the Trump administration cuts and personnel decisions. The letter warns the cuts undermine the progress FEMA has made after Hurricane Katrina. So here's another pattern. Sign a letter criticizing Trump and you're gone. The EPA signed a dissent. Employees of the EPA signed a dissent letter and he fired 5 people. And now these 24 FEMA employees are on leave, placed on leave.
Yep. Well, that's what they're striking back. Obviously, they're trying to get the employees to shut up. The employees are not shutting up because they are in these agencies. They know they're facing 2 very bad alternatives. Either they shut up and try to do their job without a full deck of cards, so to speak, you know, without all the things that they need, or and they face a disaster. Or, in fact, they speak out and they get fired for it or they get placed on leave. Let me give you a simple example. Early on, the DOGE people thought that they could cut jobs from the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA. We all know who they are. They land our planes safely and take off our planes safely, right? Well, guess what? FAA has had a shortage of air traffic controllers for many years before the Trump administration. So what happened? The Trump president got wind of this and he said, no, we're not going to fire any air traffic controllers. Okay, everybody was happy about that. They did, however, go ahead and fire people who were in charge of repairing radar systems, people who were in charge of telecommunications systems at the FAA. In other words, the air traffic controller doesn't live in a vacuum. The air traffic controller depends on all sorts of complicated systems, which other people are in charge of. It was like you were sending a soldier into battle with no gun. All right. It was just a crazy, crazy thing. And now, of course, they're pulling back on that. And the pattern is very similar. I've been studying this all over the government. It's a very similar pattern. DOGE comes in with something wild and impractical and sort of crazy. And lots of people then leave because they figure they're next and better get some deal, some buyout or something, rather than get fired. So they're forcing people out by the sheer confusion. Then it becomes apparent that, oh, gee, let me think. Americans actually want their airplanes to be landed safely. They actually want their children to be vaccinated. There's actually things there they want. So what does the government do? They start hiring people back. By the time they're hiring people back, a lot of people have gone and a lot of expertise has gone. And they've gone sometimes to the private sector where they can make more money. They're not coming back. And so the government's having one heck of a time trying to make sure that it can do the things it's supposed to do. And that's why I say there's a lot of time bombs out there in the federal government, and they're going to blow up in this administration's face.
Elaine Kmark is Senior Fellow in Governance Studies and Director of the Center for Effective Public Management at Brookings. We're also joined today by Josh Bivens, Chief Economist at the Economic Policy Institute. Same question to you, Josh. Did you expect these firings to happen so quickly, and what concerns you the most?
I definitely didn't expect them to happen so quickly. I mean, I followed the election pretty closely. I did not hear a campaign premised on we need to do radical quick cuts in the federal workforce. The campaign was about a lot of things. That one was not. It was in, as Elaine said, sort of Project 2025, but Project 2025 was repudiated a number of times during the campaign by then candidate Trump. So this was a surprise. I think the worries are sort of the same ones people have been talking about. I think it is really underrated how much the functions provided by the federal workforce provide just really critical inputs that promote economic security, higher living standards, and a vibrant private economy. And as you sort of unravel those, you're unraveling all those things. I think it can take the form of crises happen, and we expect a competent federal government to either monitor as they come or respond to them after they've hit. And we're just going to be far less effective in doing that. But then just every day, you've got a federal government that sort of provides transparent and fair sort of rules of the road for markets all through the economy. We have an SEC that makes sure that companies don't say, if you give us your money as shareholders, we're going to invest it to make profits for you later, instead of just running away with it in terms of fraud. And so that ability for people to realize, like, there's an SEC that makes sure I'm not going to be defrauded. If I give money to a company who says they're going to use it for a profitable venture, that results in like liquid capital markets, and it makes it easier for factories to be built and economic activity to happen. So I just think as you unravel that, even besides the sort of spectacular crises not avoided or not managed well, you're just going to have a more sluggish, less vibrant private economy generally. And I'll just say one thing in support of something that both Lawrence and Elaine have been talking about. You know, federal employees sometimes get accused of like not being great and not being able to cut it in the private sector. There are studies that have followed specific people. What happens to their pay and what happens to how much they work when they move from the federal government into the private sector? When they move from the federal government into the private sector, they work fewer hours in the private sector and they make more money. These are talented, better than average employees who we are just sort of, you know, willy-nilly kicking out the door for no particularly good reason. I would say it's also, it's one of my smaller worries about all of this. But in terms of just the short run mechanical impact of 300,000 layoffs within a year, which is the stated target of the Trump administration, that adds sort of one more straw to the camel's back in terms of potentially forcing the economy into a recession in the near term. If that's all that the Trump administration was doing, I would hate it. I would think it was bad in the long term. But in terms of short run recessionary impact, it would not super worry me. But you add that to the effect of their tariffs, to the effect of all the chaos that they're injecting into the economy with that, into the mass deportations, which is really reducing labor supply. It is just one more thing in terms of straws on the camel's back in terms of things that could force us into a recession in the near term. So it's short run bad because it adds to the risk of the recession. The real problem is in the long run. It just means we have a less effective federal government, and that turns out to be incredibly important for people's living standards and economic security. Hmm.
Josh Bivens is chief economist at the Economic Policy Institute. We're also joined today by Elaine Kmark, senior fellow in governance studies and director of the Center for Effective Public Management at Brookings. Lawrence Gostin is distinguished professor at Georgetown University Law Center, faculty director at the O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law. Last Thursday, Professor Gostin was fired from the scientific board of the NIH's Fogarty International Center. His letter said, "You serve at the pleasure of the Secretary of HHS, and as such, your appointment has been rescinded." On today's Your Call, we continue our new series, The Authoritarian Playbook, by focusing on the Trump administration's attacks on federal government workers. According to the New York Times, more than 150,000 workers have decided to resign. That number does not include the thousands of people who've been laid off or fired from just about every major agency: the EPA, NOAA, the CDC, the FBI, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the National Labor Relations Board, the Transportation Board, and more. If you have any questions or comments about these firings and these resignations, If you know of any government workers who lost their job or might still be working at the federal government, we'd love to hear from you. What concerns you about this? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. On Monday, we did a special Labor Day show and talked about the over 1,000 Workers Over Billionaires events taking place across the country. Because this didn't really get that much media attention, we wanted you to know that according to independent sources, at least 500,000 people across the country took to the streets. And you can find that show at kalw.org. Click News and Your Call. You can also find our past shows from our new series, The Authoritarian Playbook. Every week, we'll do our best to summarize the news, put it in context, and find out how people are responding. And today, we're focusing on the Trump administration's attacks on federal government workers. We're joined by Josh Bivens, chief economist at the Economic Policy Institute, Elaine Kmark, senior fellow in governance studies at Brookings, and Lawrence Gostin, distinguished professor at Georgetown University Law Center, who was recently fired from the scientific board of the NIH's Fogarty International Center. Professor Gostin, you all touched on this earlier, but can you elaborate? What happens when we lose so much institutional knowledge, especially when you think about the people who've been in government for decades? That institutional knowledge is now gone. Can you talk about the significance of this and what we're losing?
Yeah, that's a really important question because, if you look at our venerable scientific agencies, all of them have been world beaters. The CDC, the FDA, and NIH, and we see a group of civil servants, public servants, scientists who know more than anyone in the world about things like cancer prevention, injury prevention, heart disease, occupational health and safety, infectious diseases, vaccines. They have been crunching the numbers and looking at the studies, often writing the studies, evaluating the effectiveness of these interventions. And we rely on them. When they're gone, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. You know, just to give you the most dramatic example, you know, one day we're going to experience another health emergency, and it'll probably be soon. And it could be another pandemic. When that happens, we're going to knock on the door of CDC and no one will be home. That is, no one with any experience in fighting epidemics. We're not going to have the scientists that are developing the vaccines at NIH or in our academic centers that have previously been funded by NIH. We're not going to have an FDA that we can trust that will tell us when an intervention is safe and when it's not. We'll be rudderless. And, you know, in all kinds of areas of American life, you know, we do need people to tell us about banking and consumer protection, but I can't think of anything more important to everyday Americans that affects the health of moms and dads and kids every single day more than science and public health. And when we lose those experienced people and you have those who are appointed, like, for example, those appointed by RFK Jr. To lead our advisory committee on immunization practices at the CDC, when they're, you know, anti-vax influencers and advocates against vaccines, when they've spent a lifetime denigrating science, are we really going to trust them? Let me just give one example. You know, all of my life, I've lived by the rule, if I really want to know something about health, I'll look at the CDC website and I tell my family and friends that I can't look at that website anymore and trust it. And that's true with most of my peers. And that's why for the first time ever, you're seeing professional societies like the American Academy of Pediatrics making recommendations about vaccines and other things that are completely opposed to what CDC and HHS is doing. That's unheard of. It's dangerous and it's really worrying.
And Professor Gostin, I just got a news alert. I'm reading right now from The Guardian. Children in Florida will no longer be required to receive vaccines.
I saw that.
Against like measles, mumps, chickenpox, polio.
Yeah.
Florida has become the first state to do this.
Yeah. I mean, when I hear that news, I mean, it would make me want to collapse. Literally collapse. We've had childhood immunization requirements for school entry for way over a half century. Every state in the country does it, literally every state. A number of states, including conservative ones like West Virginia and Mississippi, have no religious exemptions even. And to think that, a big, prosperous state, influential state like Florida might not have immunization requirements is really chilling. My granddaughter lives in Florida and goes to school there. I can tell you she's going to get her vaccines, but a lot of kids will not. Mm. And this is really worrying, not only for the children, their parents, and their communities, but for the whole country, because no one is safe unless everyone is safe. We'll go to Disney World. We'll fly to Miami for a beach holiday, and we'll be at risk. Kids will fly to Las Vegas or LA or New York, and other kids will be at risk. So this is not an issue just for Florida. This is an issue for the country and for the world. And, really, I can't remember ever saying this before. This is a five-alarm fire if this were to proceed.
Wow. And in this Guardian piece, they cited CDC research from last year. Routine childhood vaccinations will have prevented 508 million cases of illness and just over 1 million deaths just between the years 1994 and 2023.
That's
children
right.
Children born between those years.
Absolutely. And in fact, CDC has ranked vaccinations as the top public health intervention of the 20th century. It saved hundreds and hundreds of millions, probably billions of lives worldwide. The United States has always been a leader because we have such high historic immunization rates that we've actually forgotten what it's like to have childhood scourges, very severe things like polio. We've eradicated smallpox, but also dangerous things like measles, mumps, rubella, hepatitis, whole range of horrible, highly contagious diseases that send kids to hospitals, send their parents and grandparents to hospitals, and can kill them and do kill them every year. And to think that this kind of MAHA movement or whatever it might be would actually see the resurgence of all of this suffering and death. Why? Why would you want to do that when you've got a safe, effective prevention that prevents kids from even getting these diseases and transmitting them? I think, if this didn't cause parents around the country, whether the Republican or Democrat, to revolt at this, I don't know what would. Mm-hmm.
Elaine, what would you like to say about the institutional knowledge that is being lost? Elaine, are you still with us?
Sorry, I had muted myself for a minute.
Oh, okay.
What I'd like to say is, of course, Lawrence is absolutely right. And the other thing about this is, this is all a self-inflicted wound. We didn't have to do any of this stuff. Okay. I mean, and even Trump was very vague about Project 2025, as Josh mentioned, and when he was campaigning, you know, we didn't have to do this. This is all a case of ideology trumping common sense. Literally, people are taking their ideology and using AI to go through thousands and thousands of pages of websites and this and that in the federal government and target things. I don't know if Lawrence knows this story, but one of my favorite stories is the attack that happened early on in the Doge days on transgenic mice. I didn't know this. Lawrence probably does, but transgenic mice are mice that are born in a certain way or raised in a certain way so that you can do cancer research on them. Is that right, Lawrence?
That is, yes.
Yeah, good. And of course, the Trump people, the Doge people thought, oh dear, that had to do with trans, must be transgender mice, and we better cut out all funding for transgender. It was just stupid. It was just ridiculous. It was the cost of letting 128 people, that was the Doge number, have free reign in the federal government and be guided by just sort of reflexive ideology. The other one that's pretty dangerous, I mean, all of this is dangerous. Let me just add some more danger. Over at the CIA, they're cutting spies. Now, why would you do that in a very dangerous world? We pick up all sorts of information. That's what they pointed out. Oh, we intercept everything. But we have to have somebody to make sense of those things. And if there was ever a cause for DEI, or for diversity, equity, and inclusion, it's the CIA. Most of the people in the world are not Caucasians. And guess what? There's cultures all over the world, languages all over the world, people all over the world who would like to do harm in the United States and become another famous Osama bin Laden. And guess what? We need people in the CIA who understand these cultures, understand these languages, understand what's going on, so that they can give us warning and protect us. So guess what? We're looking at pandemics. We're looking at Category 5 hurricanes. We are looking at terrorist attacks. Again, all of these things are self-inflicted wounds by an administration that is running on ideology and not on common sense.
Well, the other thing that was really striking, NPR had a piece last month about the firings and forced resignations at the FBI. I mean, yes. This is something that you do not see in the Republican Party, Elaine. I mean, so much of this is unprecedented. I mean, even though these other cuts are horrific, you're thinking, okay, the Republicans are going after environmental laws and regulations, but the FBI? I mean, that is very unprecedented.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. This is driven by ideologues who don't have any common sense, nor do they have any understanding that there are many, many functions in the government which average citizens want the government to do, and they hope that the government does it well. Some of them are absolutely obvious, like landing airplanes. But others, like tracking down drug cartels, okay? Why would you be cutting at the FBI when, in fact, you've got a war on drugs going on? It's the FBI that goes after and prosecutes drug kingpins. It's not the military, okay? So why would you have a war on the FBI? Why would you be cutting agents? You need more of them. This stuff is going on all over the government, regardless of mission. And there is a little bit of pushback. I will give the administration credit. The cabinet secretaries in some places are pushing back and saying, And in fact, this is the reason, by the way, that Elon Musk is gone, is that the cabinet secretaries pushed back and say, look, he's creating a lot of damage here and a lot of turmoil. So some of the cabinet secretaries are pushing back and saying, look, we have a job to do, and we can't do it with the way you are cutting people out of our agencies. So there is some pushback. There is some recognition in some places that this can't be sustained.
Josh, what concerns you about the institutional knowledge that is being lost?
Yeah, basically everything that Lawrence and Elaine just said. I mean, I'd say a couple examples of why this is important and how you can't replace it, and you surely cannot replace it if you're only trying to replace it with sort of ideologues. Like, I think the clearest example of sort of the lack of knowledge that is behind lots of the cuts that we've seen is when Elon Musk and Doge went into Social Security and decided that there were 20 million dead people receiving Social Security benefits. And that 100% blatant lie then made it into the State of the Union address, or the address before Congress, that President Trump made in January. There are not 20 million dead people receiving Social Security benefits. That is not even close to within the realm of truth. And the idea that something so wildly wrong was accepted as fact and made its way into a national address just tells you sort of the lack of expertise that's being substituted in for dedicated professional people who are being forced out. I would say the one, there's evidence all over the place, but one really compelling bit of evidence is if you look, one thing that's gotten a lot of people's attention is it's harder and more expensive to build infrastructure in the United States over time, and particularly relative to a lot of our advanced country peers. It's a genuine problem. If you are interested in government efficiency, you would want to solve this problem and make infrastructure easier and cheaper to build. And when you actually look at the empirical evidence, if you look across states and building departments and what states do better building infrastructure versus not, it turns out that cutting public sector workers in those departments actually makes infrastructure more expensive to build. It is the exact opposite of efficiency, and it is a clear indication that, experienced people with a large body of knowledge are really valuable and actually can provide the goods economically, when people want things from government. And there's sort of example after example of this. Another example is like the IRS. The more you cut employees at the IRS, the more it's easier for people, generally the very rich and corporations, to not pay their taxes. We now have a $600 billion annual tax gap. Taxes that are owed but not collected every year, that's going to get worse as we're continuing to cut the IRS, both under Doge, but also with the one big beautiful bill that just passed. So yeah, every time we've run a real world experiment where we have cut government expertise to the bone, we all end up paying more and having less economic security because of it. And so I'm very worried about all of this.
The other thing that deserves more attention is while these government jobs do not pay as much as the private sector, they're good jobs. You know that you're going to be okay when you retire, and you're going to have a very good pension and good health care. And I've been thinking a lot about the people who've lost their jobs that have lost all of that. What happens to, when you think about these people who have mortgages, taking care of their families, paying for their bills? A lot of people right now do not have that security to look forward to. The other thing I wanted to point out is the New York Times had a piece just a couple of days ago by Erica Green called "In Trump's Federal Workforce Cuts, Black Women Are Among the Hardest Hit." And she writes, "While tens of thousands of employees have lost their jobs in Trump's slash and burn approach to shrinking the federal workforce, experts say the cuts disproportionately affect Black employees and Black women in particular. Black women make up 12% of the federal workforce, nearly double their share of the labor force overall. For generations, the federal government has served as a ladder to the middle class for Black Americans who were shut out of jobs because of discrimination." What about this point, Elaine? So many people's futures are now up in the air. They don't have that security. And to think that so many Black women are losing that security and their jobs.
Yeah, it's a real crisis, particularly here in the District of Columbia, in Maryland, and the Virginia suburbs where so many federal workers live. A lot of people can't pay their mortgage. A lot of people are having to put their houses on the market. I will say that the crisis is here. It's a very serious one. On the other hand, a lot of these people are well educated. The federal government has the highest number of four-year college degree workers than any other workforce in the country and probably in the world. So people will get jobs. They have a lot of skills. All of these federal workers are highly skilled workers, and they're going to leave the government. They're going to go into the private sector. They might go into state governments and local governments, but they eventually will get around this period of crisis. And then, of course, there's going to be, as I said, time bombs exploding. Things are going to go wrong. And then they're going to have to try to hire them back. And guess what? A lot of these people will be gone. They'll be gone to other governments. They'll be gone to other places. And that's going to be a real shame. And it's going to continue to hurt the federal government. Think of it as sort of as a wave, that this first 7 months of the Trump administration are going to keep hurting federal workers and federal government functioning for probably the next decade.
Wow. We haven't even talked about the Department of Education, but in this New York Times piece, we learned that during the first 2 weeks of Trump's second term, the Education Department began purging employees from the agency. The department, more than a quarter of whose workforce was Black women, suspended dozens of people whose job titles and official duties had no connection to DEI. Denise Joseph worked in the Office of Post-Secondary Education. She spent a decade there supporting grants for minority-serving institutions. She worked her way up to a six-figure pay grade and was often the only Black person in leadership meetings. And she says, "My career is an extension of who I am, and it was all wiped out in one day," which is just so devastating. We're getting a few emails from listeners who want to say, what can people do about this? What are people doing about this? Professor Gostin, what can people do?
There are ways to protect yourselves and your kids. First of all, get your kids vaccinated for all of the preventable childhood diseases. And while you might not rely on the CDC anymore, medical societies, vaccine scientists, the American Academy of Pediatrics will give you clear, accurate information and talk to your doctor. So if your kid's not getting vaccinated in school, take her to your internist or nurse, get a vaccine, get vaccines on schedule. And when you need health advice, there are plenty of great places, reputable places to find it, including the World Health Organization website, and professional societies, the AMA, and the Mayo Clinic, and many others. So do the right thing by your kid, keep your kids safe, and rely on science. And hopefully, one day we'll return to sanity. But I just can't help thinking of what you said earlier on about Florida wanting to end school vaccine mandates. That's going to affect everybody across the country as kids travel. And other states, other red states, will also do it. And so it's all the more reason for you to get vaccinated and protect your kids.
Josh, what can people do about this? And your final thoughts? We have about a minute left.
I think the big thing is they can make clear to their legislators that they value the work that is done by the federal workforce and demand that that capacity be preserved. I mean, one tragedy here is that these are not functions people can do for themselves, or actually that they can even just buy somewhere else in the private sector. This is sort of a necessary function for a decent society that only can be provided at the public level. And so I think people have to demand that and make clear that they value it to their legislators and agitate for change.
And Elaine, your final thoughts in our final minute? I think you're muted.
So sorry about that. My final thought is that we have a very interesting thing going on in this country, which is some states, mostly blue states, are trying to figure out how they should step in once the federal government gets out of things. And red states are sort of doubling down. So we've got an experiment going on. You know, the blue states are going to continue to have their children vaccinated. The red states may not. And we will get to see, and the whole country will watch this experiment, and they're going to be able to decide what kind of place do they want to live in, and they will tell their elected officials that. So watch as this experiment goes on. Here at Brookings, we've been calling this the soft secession, that there's some states going to secede from the union that is being formed right now, and other states are going to stay in it, and we'll see who does better off. Mm. And I think Lawrence knows the answer to that.
Elaine K. Mark is Senior Fellow in Governance Studies and Director of the Center for Effective Public Management at Brookings. Josh Bivens is Chief Economist at the Economic Policy Institute. Lawrence Gostin is Distinguished Professor at Georgetown University Law Center. He was fired from the scientific board of the NIH's Fogarty International Center on Thursday. The letter he received said, "You serve at the pleasure of the Secretary of HHS. As such, your appointment has been rescinded." And again, I'm so sorry that you lost this position, Professor Gostin, and so sorry for all of your colleagues who are no longer serving the public with the incredible knowledge that they have, which took, of course, years to get to this place. We would love to have you back. Lawrence, Elaine, and Josh, thank you all for your work, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And coming up tomorrow, Mahmoud Muna and Matthew Teller will discuss their new book, Daybreak in Gaza, Stories of Palestinian Lives and Culture. The artists, doctors, students, and shopkeepers who tell their stories say they decided to join this project to humanize the people dismissed as statistics. It stands as a mark of resistance to the destruction and as a testament to the people of Gaza. We hope you can join us tomorrow. Thanks to Johanna Miyake for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.